Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that are continuing to follow us on Facebook. We appreciate that very much. This is a reminder also as we speak about Facebook. We're doing a little homework and going back, and we're going to put all those videos that we've had on Facebook now for almost 2 years, I think. So you'll be able to see those on YouTube hopefully in the next 30 days or so. Keep an eye out for that. Our videos have always been on YouTube, or I should say our audios, but we all know that video is what people want, Jack. I mean, it's been proven for years now. I think I've shared with you even from personal experience, the video marketing that I do, I get a 75 to 80% open rate, and the email marketing I do gets a 7 to 8% open rate.
Television changed everything.
You, right?
Well, television became a small screen, and the small screen is what people want to watch.
Right.
And, you know, I was at a meeting last night with a group of lawyers, and you know, shudder when lawyers start talking about, yeah, I'm starting to use video in my practice. And the group is like, okay, are we supposed to use video in the group? Because it's kind of a mentoring group and it's been private forever. And a lot of people are saying, look, a lot of people aren't showing up because they're not able to deal with the traffic and either going to San Jose or San Francisco. These are typically held at the courthouse or a law firm nearby. Yeah. And, of course, whenever there's a lot of traffic, people just are demotivated.
Yeah, right.
So now people are, hey, maybe we should have part of this on Zoom or part of this let people call in to at least listen, because then you get some participation as opposed to people not.
Yeah, I think it's the way it's going for sure. I mean, for costs, we've heard about the web services and Zoom's a big one. I think WebEx and a couple others, but I don't know how much companies are using them now. The thought was that this came out, they were going to save millions and millions of dollars on travel and jet lag and all these other things. I'm not sure. I have to believe it's becoming a bigger and bigger part of business in life.
It's a bigger part of business, although there still are people that say, look, face-to-face is important, sure, but they'll say, I'll go on that call, but I'm not turning my camera on.
Oh.
Like, you can put slides up, you can do whatever you want, but I don't want people to see that I just got out of bed. Or they're, like, very worried that they're not going to look that great, and they're very worried that they're going to come off in some wrong way. But I do think more and more people are trying to accelerate the speed of trust, which is really at the core of whether you can sell a product. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk a little bit about this as part of the growing your business and reviewing the seven essences for growth and where we are in that discussion, because more and more I look at things around, is this detracting from or speeding up the degree of trust in a relationship?
Mm.
You can look at any opportunity, any investment, any product, any service, and if it's not accelerating the speed of trust, it's probably not worth spending a lot of time with.
Okay.
Particularly if you're
makes
a professional.
Sense. Yeah.
If you're a professional, what you're selling is trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a professional, sure, you have to be competent, you have to be expert, you have to know what you're doing, you have to know, kind of have had enough experience to know how things go. But fundamentally, the client has to have a sense that they can rely on you and that you're not just in it for the money. It really is a profession. You're going to give them the right advice. You're going to accept the fact that, look, if the right advice is settle, because this is not a case you can win, you give that advice. There are lots of people that question, unfortunately, whether people are really just in it for the money.
Hmm.
I mean, that's what a lot of people worry about.
Yeah.
They think, well, I'm going to somebody, but are they really just in it for the money?
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at these seven essences for growth even as a little bit along the lines of, how do you build a network of trust that builds a company that has a brand that is sustainable? Because a brand is a promise that trust will be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of stuff ultimately doesn't have intellectual property other than a trademark.
Yeah.
Like the Coca-Cola formula could become public, but it's still not Coca-Cola because it doesn't have that brand
on
it.
That's a good point.
And, and the brand represents a statement of trust.
Yeah.
So trust is at the core of a lot of what gets evaluated by the network of people that when you're starting a business gets going. And as we've had different people on the show, a lot of our evaluation when we question them is, can you trust this CEO? Mm-hmm. Can you trust this co-founder? Can you trust the team?
Right.
Can you trust what they're building? Does it make sense? Is it going to be trusted? Even today, Tesla believes that it can deliver a totally self-driving car. And the news media is hammering them with every exception that says, no, you cannot trust the self-driving car. Yeah. Even in Russia, where there's that fire that was tweeted around of some Model 3, what's the message? You cannot trust a self-driving car, particularly from America, if you're a Russian. Yeah.
That's
if you
a good
think
point.
About it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the high trust, especially in high trust, high value, I guess, relationships or conversations, you're speaking of, you know, we're not talking about buying a laptop or a camera or a computer. We're talking about someone that's paying a lot of money potentially in a high trust relationship or a transaction.
And even at the level of buying a laptop or a computer, I've seen people, I've heard them in my office, they'll say, well, let's not buy a refurbished machine, even if it's like a third of the price. Mm-hmm. A high-end refurbished machine that would cost $3,000 might be like under $1,000. And I say, why? Well, you can't trust that there isn't malware that's been put on that machine. Whereas if it comes from the factory somehow, we should trust, well, it came from the factory and they must have gotten it right. Of course, it's probably equally likely that the factory will maybe get infected as well. We don't know. But in their head, if it comes from the factory, the likelihood of infection is lower. And they say, look, if it's infected and you bought it as a refurbished machine, are you going to regret it? Because you'll spend more time trying to get it fixed. Now, the way that refurbished industry has tried to deal with trust by saying it's certified by the factory as refurbished. Now, whether that's so, a little bit like the pre-owned, this is a pre-owned Lexus or pre-owned Mercedes-Benz. Yeah. It's not really used. Yeah. It's pre-owned.
Yeah, no, that's good. So we're going to review, you thought it'd be a good idea to review these seven S's since we've been doing this for a while now.
Right, right.
And I think it's worthy to kind of go through them for sure. So where do you want to get started with that?
So it's very integrated and we're about to start school again. I thought it was like appropriate to do a pre-class review because we're going to maybe over the last quarter of the year here that we're soon entering into get to sort of amplify some of these in bigger ways. So I like to say you start really with the team and a founder who's developed a team, which really means you're evaluating talent. And ultimately you're evaluating motivation, which are these folks really got laser-like motivation to succeed. And if you don't get that team together and gelled in a way that works, where the founder, co-founder, whatever that group is, and it's typically some group, there are exceptions. Sometimes there's like Bezos and his wife driving cross-country, working on a business plan. It's a great story. I mean, it rarely actually results in a business. He was kind of the huge exception. I guess they were as a couple. I mean, as I said, if they had gotten divorced within the 3 years of founding Amazon, I don't think Amazon would be the company it is today. The reality is they hung together for 20-odd years or over 15 for sure, and that company succeeded with both of them contributing. But that's kind of a rare case. So then the second thing is usually there's a technology. It doesn't have to be a technology, but some solution to real pain. So in the case of Amazon, just to use that, I think the bookstore was kind of a pain to find the book you wanted. A card catalog in a library is not that efficient.
True.
Think
yeah.
about it. The days of, man, my kids, my grandkids laugh at me. We used to go to a card catalog that had a bunch of index. I still use index cards so they know I'm talking about because I have one right here. I use them because I think they're convenient. Put it in your pocket. It's easy to port it. You know, you can read it. It's not just another screen. The battery can die. So I say to them, we used to go and look at card catalogs and look at subject matter catalogs and author catalogs. And they're like, what? Are you crazy? And then there's a copy machine where you would copy sections of the book. I said, you don't know how well you have it that you can just Google and get what you want, say, from a Wikipedia, because that's where kids go now. They just ask a question on Google, Wikipedia comes up, and man, they got the book report done. I mean, think about it.
No, it's amazing.
It's a totally different...
It sure dates me. I was thinking how I used to do our homework. We used to go get those encyclopedias, remember that?
Right. And so Bezos and his wife recognized that the book industry needed to be shook up. that the card catalog was doomed, that there should be an electronic catalog, and there should be quick delivery of the actual product. It was not the downloadable delivery initially. Mm-hmm. It was the book. It still is the book, but by and large, people are moving towards electronic Kindle, and he eventually moved in that direction. But big picture, the pain point at that point was people don't want to go to the library. They don't want to flip through a card catalog. They don't want to find the book. They don't even want to do it at the bookstore. They don't even want to walk the aisles of the bookstore. They want to get what they want when they want it now. And that was a real pain point, and he came up with a technology solution. Yeah.
Don't you think these big visionaries like them, we've talked about patience and sticking with it, and you know, because, let's face it, Jack, as I think back, I remember a lot of people saying, this guy's nuts. What's he going to do, try to take over bookstores and do this online?
Well, there was a famous remark by Steve Jobs, people don't read.
Right.
There was literally a famous remark that Steve Jobs said to Bezos, like, yeah, that's nice, but people don't read. Which there was and is some truth to, but Bezos' rejoinder would be, I'm going to deliver movies, then I'm going to deliver, you know, music, and then I'm going to deliver, you know, like, he had the answer, which is the books is just kind of the way to get started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there probably would be some people that would say maybe Bezos would have accelerated even greater by starting with movies, and maybe he would be Netflix as well as books, because books sort of is a little stodgy.
It
the
is.
Truth is, there are very few people, if you truly interview, if you were to interview, if you were to get honest answers and say to people, like the way they're going around to all the Congress people and senators, have you read the Mueller report? It's 448 pages. You know the truthful answer. Of course not.
Right.
So, I mean, they're trying to force people to do something that obviously takes time, obviously takes some degree of concentration, and there are a lot of people that have much busier things to do. So the team with the technology, and then, of course, the technology has to be not just sort of nice to have. It's got to be something where there's a market or an emerging market or a desire to get what is going to solve the pain. There's a lot of stuff that comes out. We see it all the time in our practice. Someone comes in and says, yeah, I got this great widget, whatever it is. And I'm like, what solution? Like, what's the demand? Right. What is it doing? Oh, it's kind of entertaining. And I said, so it's a entertainment. No, it's functional. Okay, well, it's functional. Oh, it's educational. They're like many balls in the air about what it is. It almost is like a Swiss Army knife, right? And you look at them saying, I don't think people are going to buy this as a Swiss Army knife. I think they're going to look at this as this is somebody that came up with something that he wanted to put his or her name on.
Right.
And it didn't really solve a real problem. So there really isn't a market. So as bad as it is to use this example, I will. I do think that Theranos, the founder or founders, because she did have a team around her, and she certainly raised a lot of investment. She's going, that case is apparently going to trial next year. It's a great story.
I'll bet.
We'll do a different story
on that.
There's got
to be
a
movie eventually.
There is. There is one that's coming out, but we're getting ready for it. But think about it. The market is there. People do not like blood draws. I've had enough of them as you get older. Of course, they're doing more and more testing. And, you know, it's a weird thing. There's a lot of human mistakes in finding the place to put the prick in. To imagine that you're going to just tiny little prick of the end of your finger and a tiny drop of blood, I mean, that does really sound like a real desire need, of which 90% of people that have their blood drawn will be, hey, I'm going to do this because I don't want someone sticking some long needle in.
Right.
And it takes longer to go through a formal blood draw because they take time to get the blood out of you. So there's a lineup. You have to wait for it. So this idea of making it kind of like a PC, go to the Walgreens, I think it is, or CVS, one of them signed up. And they still have some of the rooms are still there. They just have been rebranded. But there's a market, there's a real demand, there's a real pain, and the technology solves it. Of course, that was the big issue. Did they really have a solution, or was it all make-believe? And that's what apparently is going to get tried.
Wow.
So then number four is, so the three so far are team, technology, and market, or more broadly, real talent, real pain point, real desire to solve the pain. Number four is investors that see that vision and buy into it and say, wow, you have shown up at exactly the right time to do something that we didn't think could be done. and we're going to back it. Mm. And it might be just a few investors. It might be more. Look, Airbnb was declined like 19 times before they got their first money. Mm-hmm. And yet you could say, hey, this is a pretty lightweight business. Other people's houses, other people's services. We're just the information mm-hmm. system, man. We don't have to deliver books like Amazon does. The stuff is there.
Yeah.
It's immovable objects that stay there that other people take care of because it's their house. I mean, think of that from the abstract.
Yeah.
You get pretty excited. You should, as an investor, say, wow, if you can pull this off, there's a lot of profit in this.
Yeah.
I mean, Amazon's got a lot of inventory and a lot of people and robots and machines moving stuff around. You have to give him credit that he's gotten as far as
could
he's gotten.
Is that a situation, Airbnb and others? I think it brings up a good point. Where, right or wrong, you have a great idea to disrupt a market or a certain industry, but you don't introduce the magical technology out of the gate. Maybe the idea gets started, and then you introduce technology as you get going.
Well, that's what they did. They used, like, mailing lists. I've seen a lot of clients that say, look, I started this business with essentially a mail list mm-hmm. and people recognizing that I could fulfill as an intermediary, which you can argue real estate brokers have done traditionally with postal mail and advertising. Contact me and I'll get you what you want.
Right.
I'll find it for you. You tell me what you like. I get these folks all the time, often commercial real estate brokers, that say, hey, you've got commercial properties. We see you on a list. We've got all this stuff out there.
Yeah.
What do you want? Give me your top 10 things. And you give them the top 10 of what you want, and they're like, you want the top 0.1% that most other people get ahead of me.
Yeah.
Like, you're asking me to do magic, but the point is, this stuff has all been done different ways. Now you put some automation in, which is really what the internet opened up, and it's a whole new ball game
mm-hmm.
because it changes the way in which brokers have to operate, in which all intermediaries, mm-hmm. including lawyers, accountants, all professionals, really all knowledge workers. So that gets to point five, which is if you have the team, you have the technology or the beginning of it, you have a real market, and you have some investors that are kind of providing the oxygen, or mm-hmm. some people say the grease, to kind of move things along, because people don't want to work for free and often can, and the days are over of the founder who just like completely eats beans forever.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a few still around, but most of them are like, hey, I need to get some salary here.
Right.
I got to make something work. So the fifth is you get to the scaling factor, which is, can this scale?
Mm-hmm.
Can you turn this into more than books, Jeff, if you're mm-hmm. talking to Bezos? Can you turn this into more than just San Francisco apartments? Can you make this like all real estate mm-hmm. in all of California, all of the United States, all of the world?
Yeah.
I mean, think about what they've accomplished. They've
right.
essentially created a bigger hotel business
mm-hmm.
than all the hotel businesses.
Right.
Because essentially it's a people's version
mm-hmm.
of making accommodations available,
right.
which of course the hotels are not too happy about.
No.
And a lot of the cities and towns are not happy because they escape a tax, which represents a way to sustain those little communities. So
mm-hmm.
think about it. I mean, it's a big deal. So can you scale it? A, do you have the
mm-hmm.
right team to scale it? B, do you have the right technology to scale
mm-hmm.
it? C, do you have the right investors to scale it? Because if you take the wrong investors, and we were talking about this before we went on air, if you take an investor that maybe is going to bear hug you in kind of a nice way, which is they'll give you money, but they'll kind of say, really just do things for me and for what I represent, because I'm your main investor,
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of captive, you lose the ability for it to become much bigger. So let's say Airbnb had gone to some group, let's even say they went to Marriott and said, how would you like to do an experiment? Give us $10 million, we'll give you like 20% or 19.99%. There's tax reasons for why it stays under 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see this little experiment in action. Well, Marriott probably would have acquired them or forced them
mm-hmm.
to go in a certain way, saying, wait a minute, we're cannibalizing.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
There's the bear hug risk. So choosing your investors
with
the scaling idea in mind is often not forefront, particularly if you're eating beans and you want to get some money and you're like, hey, the VCs are too tough on me or the valuation is too tough. So those are things to consider.
Mm-hmm.
And usually most people fail at the point of trying to scale. I'm going to repeat that because it's so true. When you look at businesses that look great on paper, great team, great technology, great marketing, mm-hmm. and maybe great investors, mm-hmm. when they get to actually scale, the wheels sometimes come off.
For a variety of reasons. Lack of marketing, operational control, okay, right?
All sorts of practical, stupid, sometimes unpredictable things like, you know, I'll give you one that's kind of a footnote. Yeah, the founder kind of went on, it's actually a real story, I got a call on this. The founder kind of went on this retreat to India, and we don't know where he is. So the investors are getting cold feet. I'm like, you're kidding me. And he's like, no, we don't even know what to do. We can't even find them. I was like, you have to hire a private investigator in India.
Oh, my God.
Like, well, do you know any law firms that can connect us to a private investigator? No, these are real stories. This is a little bit like, wasn't it the governor of South Carolina that went on some loop-de-loop thing with his South American?
Yeah,
I hope I'm not defaming someone here. But it was in the news, and it was like, does that ever happen? Yeah. That stuff is called life.
Yeah.
And it happens, and people do go through divorces, and all sorts of scandals happen, and all sorts of stupid, nutty stuff happens.
Well, look at it in the news every day. I mean, I hate to bring up such a negative story, but look at all the people that are involved with Epstein and that whole deal, right? I mean, we haven't even heard the names. That we know some of the names, but there's another example of very influential people and businesses and organizations.
I'm going to flip that story around, because the way I think of that story is, that guy became successful in his hedge fund business and in his real estate business mm-hmm. by providing add-on services that other people couldn't to his
amazing
league of influential investors slash, you know, what you might call influencers, investors influencers who say, oh, man, I can help you. Jeff, you're going to invite me to that party?
Right,
I mean, I hate to talk about someone that's deceased, but think about the competitive advantage he had to some degree in the illegality that's being alleged, if true. He's got people who obviously think this guy is wired into some legitimate version of Thailand in the United States.
Right.
I mean, I said to my wife the other day, you know, she's so funny, she says, why aren't people just getting off talking about him? He's gone. We should just say hip, hip, hooray and move on.
Oh, no.
And I said, I laughed. I said, man, this is going to be like five full-length movies, a miniseries, 20 books, you know, multiple conspiracy theories. Yeah. This is entertainment now. And the point that is correct is that to some degree, this guy did something that had he really just said, look, this is really all about my personal situation, move to Thailand. It's legal there.
Yeah.
It's legal in some countries. It's crazy, but it's true. Probably is in, oddly, it's probably even legal in Nevada somewhere, right? I mean, there are all sorts of things that are legal in different parts of the United States. So this fifth factor of scaling is often where the foundation that's been laid by the lawyers, the accountants, the consultants, the advisors, the board members, either works or it fails.
Okay.
Like a good foundation for a great building, even the prefab type that we were talking about in the other show, like you got to have that right foundation, because if that foundation is not ready to scale, like really to get to the point where the typical line that the VC makes is, just two words, at scale. Like, that's it. Just like, they don't even put a sentence around it. They're like, at scale. And the point they're making when they use those two words, at scale, Amazon-like, Airbnb-like, you know, hotels tonight-like. Right. I mean, look at these amazing things that have scaled in such big ways worldwide. Worldwide. Uber. Worldwide. I mean, Lyft is even limited, I think, to the U.S. I mean, Lyft is just a U.S. competitor, about one-fourth or one-fifth the valuation, because it's really not yet truly at scale, and I don't even think they want to go overseas. I think their view is that's a way to lose money. So the sixth is, if the foundation has been laid, then the right IP has been obtained, and the right distribution has been obtained, the right reselling, the right employment agreements, the right consulting agreements, the right advisor agreements, the right stock options, the right stock grants. I mean, you can go down the list. Yeah. There's like a million different things. And then that stuff creates a barrier to entry, because collectively it represents, this business has actually done things to sustain itself. There's oxygen in the tank. There's money in the bank. There's lines of credits. The banking relationship is well established. and that network of relationships, not just the patents, not just the trade secrets, not just the copyrights, not just the trademarks, but everything together is networked in a way that makes it work. And I want to drop a footnote here. I'm not sure that Facebook actually has gotten it right. And I think this current set of attacks, which are vicious, I mean, they're really the government, both in the United States and overseas, is hammering. I mean, there's a lot of governments that all are looking at this saying, hey, you know, and it may turn out that the end user agreement wasn't robust enough or the notices. I mean, people are talking about this like, hey, it should have the notices equivalent to what's on a pack of cigarettes, which apparently they're now changing to make more robust. Yeah. The FDA just announced that this morning or this week.
Yeah.
Like, there should be some notice. By using this product, you may be giving up your privacy. Of course, the funny thing is whenever people from Facebook talk about it, of course that's what people understand. Well, not a lot of people really understood that, right?
Well, yeah, and I hate to take it even deeper into the weeds, but they're saying, a lot of these professionals are saying, now we're going to have several disorders because of social media.
Right? Disorders, I mean, as in like
psychological,
civil
wars? Mental disorder.
Oh, that's right.
You know,
like cancer.
Yeah,
like worse than cancer. Worse than
psychological disorders. They're going to name several disorders for children and younger people that are like all day long, right?
Yes. Yes, I think there is a great video somewhere that if we had a magical, talk about desire and solution, magical whiteboard, called it flat screen.
Voice activated.
It would go like this. It would go, okay, now, you know, bring up the video of Tim Cook when he's criticizing Zuckerberg about, man, you've kind of screwed up what happened here.
Right.
There's no way I would have ever put myself in a position of having all these privacy violations. When I first saw that interview, I said, you know the meta message is there? The meta message is, we had this great intoxicating set of hardware and software, and you may destroy the golden goose that we shared because you didn't get good advice.
Yeah.
And you didn't put good practices into place about how to protect privacy.
Yeah.
That's the way I read that at the time. Now, if you could show that, I mean, someday the studio of the future, if you can imagine, okay, Alexa, bring up Tim Cook. And then you show it. A little bit like I heard a podcast either yesterday or maybe this morning where they brought up this scene and they took a lot of it. So I question whether it was a fair use from The Godfather.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene where that whole Fredo thing, which is creating a lot of buzz in New York, because that guy that's on
Cuomo,
exactly. And,
it's hilarious.
And it's hilarious,
actually.
Right? But you think about it and you say, you know, those people have all these engineers, they're searching for video and they bring stuff up. So they can put stuff in that really does amplify their point, which is, hey, there are people that really kind of take criticism poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, apparently, you know, maybe you overacted, maybe you didn't. But the point about a business is if you're building the right business with the right foundation and the right barriers, the scaling should work without what I would call the externalities, without the, well, now you're going to get 50 class action cases, or now you're going to have to pay this ginormous fine, or now you're going to have to do this. There should be enough smart people on the team, and that may have been the gap here.
Mm.
The gap may literally have been, hey, I'm the CEO. I'm sort of paraphrasing maybe the way Zuckerberg thought of. Hey, I'm the CEO. I've got a couple of lieutenants that are pretty good at doing this stuff, and, you know, I'm fine. We can build a legal department, but you got a set of great outside lawyers. And everything is just fine and dandy. And there was no super critical review of, well, what if?
Yeah.
You know, what if? And you look at a film that's playing right now, and I've seen it. I actually watched it twice. It's a little lengthy, called The Big Hack.
Mm.
The Big Hack tells the story of this Cambridge Analytica, quote-unquote, leak. I mean, it wasn't really a leak. It was sort of a taking of information. And how maybe Facebook was somehow complicit or winking and nodding. I mean, that's the tenor of the film. Whether it's true or not is another story. But the net is, it's very clear now that social media, all of it, and it's not just Facebook, it's Twitter, it's
Instagram,
all
that,
the whole lot of them. And, of course, it does tend to also play to some degree against everyone that could be otherwise fine.
Yeah.
So Apple is getting some fallout from this. I'm sure lots of big companies will get fallout from this. So the final remark on the seven is once you've got the foundation laid and the barriers and the IP and there really is the chance of scale and you've got the right investors to do it and the market is eating it up and the technology is expanding and the team is expanding, you're going to see competitors because you succeeded.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. When Amazon succeeded, there were other people, and there still are.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Bezos said the other day or a few months ago, hey, look, someday Amazon will be out of business, like, someone's going to kill us.
It might have been the article you sent me,
yes.
But he had a great line. I'm surprised I didn't see it before, but I absolutely loved the line. One of his comments early on, I don't know when he made it, was he goes, when they talked about other industries or other business, his comment was, your margin is my opportunity.
Yes.
What a great statement.
It's a great statement, and it does create the fear, you know, sort of the fear of God.
Right.
Because people used to say that, I've been around long enough to remember this. People used to say that about IBM. People used to say about IBM, well, we can't enter this market because it's adjacent to what IBM is doing with the mainframe.
Right.
So people were very cautious about entering the mini computer market. DEC did it on the East Coast. HP did it on the West Coast. But they were always, hey, IBM kind of owns big iron.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to stop them from reducing that big iron? And eventually they did, but they kind of did it slowly. They, frankly, were a little less aggressive than they perhaps could have been. But there were people that would say, I remember, and you know, I'm hoping to get Bill Fenwick, who is my mentor at Fenwick & West.
Yeah,
now,
be good to have him on.
Like we used to say, if IBM just announces, that's it. The market is frozen.
Yeah.
So if Amazon announces we're going to get into drug delivery or whatever, cosmetics, I guess, was the recent one, all of these other online cosmetic providers, like, immediately the stock drops 25%.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, Amazon's going to kill you. They haven't even introduced a product.
Yeah, no.
They just made an announcement.
One of the introductions was the, because my daughter was interested in this, it was personal shoppers.
Yes.
Right? So they, the whole concept of people, they take a look at you, your image, your look, your style, all that stuff.
Yep.
And when they made that announcement, Stitch Fix and a couple other companies that have been just
immediately. Amazing. Because it's a little bit like, hey, the pioneer, the Stitch Fixes of the world, this is even true, frankly, for the iPod and the iPad and the iPhone. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was earlier pioneers that introduced products that were not fully baked.
Right.
And then the fast follower, in this case a large company, in Apple for the iPod and then the iPad and the iPhone, in Bezos' case, it's a little bit like you're sitting on the ability to deploy this ginormous machine.
Yeah.
And by the way, you've got the machine that helps keep the machine running because you've got AWS, which is Amazon Web Services, which is like having this ginormous AI-based machine that can create other machines. So you got the beginning of this replication machine. So all you have to do is start using talent to pick off markets.
Well, you know, and again, as we were going to finish up here in a minute, but this is another example. Most people wouldn't know this. I didn't know until I started Bundle Select when I brought on Chris Bailey, who was who runs all of our technology, one of the founders at Hotel Tonight, speaking of that.
Yes.
When he was assessing the back end stuff, where to start the servers, where to do this, where he goes, Joe, I'm telling you right now, it's Amazon. I said, what? Amazon?
Yes. You thought that was too heavy duty.
Like, that's Amazon, big, they're that's in that big. Business?
Yes.
And he
yes.
said, absolutely. Not only they're efficient, but they're cheap. It's
and
amazing.
And had you not done that, the ability to scale would be questioned. And I get so many cases from so many entrepreneurs that try to save a dime, and unfortunately they do to their regret because they go with some approach that doesn't allow to scale. And they're like, you know, I've seen this, like literally seen this so many times. Someone will say, you know, I actually created, and they'd show me that they created the first Match.com, the first dating site.
Right.
What happened? Well, we couldn't scale.
Yeah.
Why not? The technology wouldn't scale. Why? Well, we made the mistake of fill in the blank. Whatever that is. And they show you the demo, and these are old historical cases now. If the people I'm thinking about are going to be like, wow, you remember my case. Like, literally, they could have been what well became. There's so many stories like
amazing.
That, which is I had the team, just to do the review, I had the team, I had the beginning of the technology, I had the market identified, I had the investors, I couldn't scale for one reason or another. So the barriers to entry became a little less a lot less relevant, completely irrelevant, and competition took me. Competition then just took me. And Amazon, and when Bezos made that statement, again, Alexa, bring up Bezos announcing that Amazon will go out of business, and then it comes up on the screen, Bezos saying, you know, someday, I think he did it in some sort of internal paper, and that got leaked, someday someone's going to take the legs out from Amazon. And the only question is, and I think it was Andy Grove who wrote the book called, you know, Businesses for the Paranoid, you have to be paranoid in business, is that you have to be on the alert for where you're at risk and who can take you on.
Right.
And whether it's a big guy or maybe it could be something that's completely orthogonal to your thinking and all of a sudden, man, they landed.
Right.
That just landed a huge punch, whatever that was.
Right.
And all of a sudden, a lot of the Amazon forest starts like being sucked away by something else. So in many ways, and I'll end with this point, there's a belief that the blockchain, which is something that's I've been studying a lot, I'm taking courses on, because I do believe it represents a true existential threat for people like Amazon, which is a group of other people, think of all the Airbnb owners of real estate, are working, they call them miners, probably the wrong name, I would just call them contributors, are working to support a new network, and that network takes the Amazon profit, takes the intermediary profit out and redistributes it to the contributors. It changes the whole model. So if I'm Amazon, I start thinking, you know, I got to get into the blockchain game and fast, because I got to be the brand of where people want to go to launch their blockchain efforts and take a small slice out of millions of new businesses. Because if I don't do that, I may get zero.
Right.
So I'm better off kind of joining them. I mean, they did this indirectly when they brought in all the used booksellers, because they said, well, we're not going to fight these used booksellers. Let's let them advertise on our site. If people want to buy a used book, go buy a used book.
Yeah.
We'll make a little profit on that. We're fine with that. We'll take a handling fee for it. We'll take a prime fee for it for shipping that book.
Yeah.
So that was a smart move, and I think that's the one huge advantage that Bezos and his team have. They don't fight every fight. They like sort of say, you know, let's do it kind of in a way that shares what's available. I think there are some companies that just choose to fight every fight, almost like a knee-jerk reaction. And I think their view is there's lots of room for people to make money, and we're going to focus on the stuff that really makes a lot of money, but we'll let other people make money with us.
Yeah.
I think that's a smart move.
Creating a win-win is usually the best way to go.
But
for
a lot of American thinking is often,
hey,
man,
that's true.
You're coming into my forest.
Yeah.
I'm going to attack you like you've never believed an attack can happen. And unfortunately, that often leads to some crazy, crazy situations. I don't know if it will play out in ways that cause the breakup of some of these businesses, because that's really where the government is going right now. The government's going in the direction of where they went with IBM, where they went with Microsoft, but now the targets are Google, Facebook,
Amazon,
maybe even Apple,
Amazon.
Because they've got a lot of control in their app store, which is an analogy here. And so these places that have lots of sort of monopolistic type power over pricing, that is under the bright, bright light lens. And if a Democrat comes in 2024, 2020, I don't know, at some point it's got to happen, right?
All right.
There's going to be some change.
Yeah,
and
there
you
is.
Know those companies have to be thinking about that.
Yeah. A lot of exciting stuff as we wrap up. One of the things that, as we go through this, that I would say to those potential entrepreneurs or people thinking about starting a business, the wonderful thing about the world here in which we live in is you can never say there's not another idea out there, right? I don't think we could ever do that.
No, because what's happening now is there's a whole set of meta ideas that are building on blockchain, AI.
Exactly.
So we've got this whole new sort of phase or
AI and AI. Blockchain.
Yeah,
it's
a little bit like if you review the history of Silicon Valley from the early 1900s, which really started with a military history, and I won't get into this at any length, but it's worth looking at some point. we've really had about five or six major cycles where different things have built on other things, which have built on other things. Mm. So no, they're not closing the patent office anytime soon, although that was a proposal back in like the 1930s. Well, everything's been invented. Hey, we got a car, we got an airplane. What more could we want? I mean, they had no fathom. Now I think people are recognizing that if you pool the right talent together and you motivate them, and you keep the motivation going,
right,
there will be success at solving the deep problems, like getting a man on the moon, getting a man on Mars. I guess the latest thing is Trump wants to buy Greenland. I guess that may be like the Louisiana Purchase. I saw that in the news before I came here today. I was thinking, well, it's probably a pretty big place. You know, is it for sale? I mean, I didn't think that anyone was going to sell it.
Like them or not, or whatever your political persuasion is, one of the things that I review and I see about this whole Trump phenomenon.
Yes.
And some people would call it differently, but I always look at the positive and what it comes of. And my point here is we have never seen social media or Twitter being used in a facet of political ever in our lifetime.
Yes.
And he really brought that.
He brought it.
And I'm not saying I agree with the crap that he puts out there.
Right.
But he brought that to the stage.
Well,
right?
Obama would say that he really initiated, but the real truth is Obama's messages were plain vanilla.
Exactly.
Didn't get anyone
excited.
Done
by someone else.
Done by somebody else. And, you know, it was probably the beginning.
True.
And Trump probably learned from it. But, you know, we are in the arena of getting people's attention requires a lot.
Whether you like it or not.
Whether you like
it
or not. And, you know, going back to the point that we started with, lawyers and other professionals are recognizing you're not going to get a person's attention even with a plain Jane website.
Yeah.
You're going to have to put video, you're going to have to put audio, you're going to have to do things that accelerate the speed of trust.
Yep.
And that is the one area we should end on, which is a lot of these businesses, Facebook included, and there's a long list, they have actually decelerated the speed of trust, and they may well have retarded it.
Mm.
And with that deceleration and retarding, there's an argument that eventually that's going to open the door for a better approach.
Okay.
So there's real risk there. Whether investors see it yet or whether the team sees it or, you know, how it actually plays out in real life is yet to be written. But it seems to me very clear that in the abstract, if you're looking at the goal of social media, Facebook in particular, but more generally all social media, was to increase communication and connectedness in a trusted way, it seems to almost have done the opposite.
Yeah, and I could tell you right now, and it's an informal survey, but I hear it and see it all the time.
Yes.
Young people, they don't like Facebook at all.
No,
at all. I mean,
no.
I'm talking about...
But they just moved to Instagram, right?
Right, well...
And then where would they go from that?
I don't know.
Something but it's true. Faster. But it's true. Probably a smart move that Facebook bought Instagram.
Yeah.
But probably now they're going to have to suffer some argumentation that, well, wait a minute, you've kind of monopolized the area.
Right.
Maybe you shouldn't have been allowed to buy it. Maybe you have to divest it. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on in the background here. But fundamentally, at the end of the day, there's going to be change, and we can count on that.
Absolutely.
For sure.
All right. So as we wrap up, it's always a good time to come in here and talk with Jack about the business and the series. This is an exciting series, this growing your business.
Yes.
The starting. But for more information, remind people how they can contact you.
Jack Russo, J. Russo, J-R-U-S-S-O, at Computer Law. It's one word, computerlaw.com. www.computerlaw.com. And yes, we still have a phone. We still answer the phone. 650-327-9800. And yes, we meet people. We like meeting people. It's a good thing. Not just on the phone and not just by video. We welcome you to come in our office, spend some time with us. We have offices in Palo Alto and San Francisco. The goal is really to cover Silicon Valley, and that keeps stretching further north and further south. Yeah, at one point someone said, when are you going to open an office in Los Angeles? And, you know, I went to school at UCLA, so I have a lot of friends and colleagues and clients in Los Angeles. And it's kind of a good point, which is there's a lot still going on in Los Angeles, and this convergence of entertainment with media and Silicon Valley just continues apace. And I think you're right that that whole batch of real estate between San Jose and Santa Barbara. It's really Santa Barbara. So it's like that a massive amount of land that hasn't been developed yet. It's going to happen, whether it's, you know, fast train, maybe that's not going to happen, or faster planes or smaller planes or these drone-like planes or these electric planes, electric helicopters. Something's going to change the game, right?
Something's going to change the game. All right. For more information, you can always go to reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Thanks again for tuning in today. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.